Hi everyone, it's Sarah, I'm back. Welcome to the XYZ Experiment Podcast. I'm here with Fiona and I have an amazing special guest, Leonie. Welcome, Leonie. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It is an honour. Yes, Leonie here. I am 43. I'm married to a wonderful, wonderful person. And we have an almost 11-year-old little boy and he's delightful. I run my own business. I hire women only, not intentionally. We're a trades business. And we've been doing that for about 7 years. And we recently, or not recently, about 2.5 years ago, my partner and I decided to open up our marriage. And so here we are. And it's come with a whole bunch of different experiences and, life-changing things that, we just weren't expecting. So I'm excited to talk about these things with you guys.
Can't even tell you how excited I am about this.
Me too.
I've been saying that we need to, like, you know, X-rate the podcast a bit. I've been saying we need to spice it up, haven't I, Fiona, for a while now. Yep. So I'm bringing in the spice. So, Leonie, what generation do you belong to?
Well, according to Dr. Google, I'm somewhere between millennial and zennial. I'm on the cusp because I'm 43, so I guess, I don't really identify with that terminology, but I can. Like, if we talk about it, I'll probably, you know, froth around the music that I'm into and movies I watched and stuff. So I guess I could probably come to the party if we nerded out on it enough, but yeah.
And I'm a Zennial as well, but more Gen X leaning. what is the most Zennial thing about you?
So I might have downloaded Stealing Beauty, which was a Liv Tyler movie from the mid-1990s.
Gosh, there'll be so many who are like, Stealing Beauty, say no more.
I think, I haven't seen it. I'll have to look it up.
I feel like it maybe bypassed you. You will probably, yes, but I think it's a sweet spot for Zennials, I reckon. Yeah. Leonie, you and I have known each other for how many years now?
A few.
I've been saying to my podcast buddies that love our content, but wanted some spice in the mix. Wanted to just pull some paprika, some, you know, mix spice, some like heat into it and stir it into the pot. And you're someone I admire because you live your life on your own terms and you're a badass and you've just done, you know, I guess you've lived the dream in terms of being open to many different experiences. Mm. So you're ethically non-monogamous. Take me back to the start.
So, yes, I've been with my partner for just over 15 years and I am refraining from calling them my husband because they are agendered. And prefer to be referred to as they, them. So I'm also being challenged in myself to refer to them as my partner, even not my husband. About 2.5 years ago, we were having a conversation around period sex. And he's always like, yeah, you're always so horny and randy around your period. And I'm like, I know. And it never occurred to me, like, let's have period sex. But then someone was convincing me that it was ace. And I was like, hey, let's try it. And he's like, no. And, you know, and no shame to them. Like, I wasn't into wanting them to do anything that they weren't comfortable with. And I let it go. And then this was during COVID and I kind of joked about it with them again saying, oh, you know, I'm feeling horny. I've got my period. We should try it again. He's like, no. And he was sitting at the desk doing something on the computer and he pushes back in a very dramatic way and goes, okay, hands on the table. And he said, if this is something you really want to explore, then I am happy for you to explore that with someone else. And he said, I'm not trying to reject you or anything like that, but I don't want you to go through this life if not having that experience, if that's something you want, but I don't feel like I can make that need for you. And I was like, whoa, okay. And in my mind, that was really confronting because I had never thought about being with anyone else but my partner. Like I came from a very Pentecostal Christian background. We both did. So purity code was massive. and being with your partner, the mononormative narrative was very much at the forefront of my mind. And so that's where all my neurological pathway, heteronormative brain just sort of was not able to quite cope with what they just said. But I suspect that we had been prepared for this lifestyle way before I even realised it was happening. I think the self-development and the way that my partner and I talk, and everything was open slather. If they had a crush on someone, we talked about it just because we thought it was really cute and fun. It never occurred to me that that's the beginnings of a potentially non-monogamous lifestyle.
And yeah. I would love to go back to the start. So you both grew up in the church, is that right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I grew up in the church. I became a Christian, what they would call born again Christian, when I was about 15. Went up the front and gave my heart to the Lord. And I say that very condescendingly, and there's nothing wrong with having a spiritual connection with Christianity or any religion for that matter. And that was the beginning of my spiritual journey, you could say, because I am still quite spiritual and I'm no longer practicing Christianity, but I'm definitely a mystic without a doubt. And so that was the beginning of my Christian journey. And my partner had a similar journey, but we were living on different parts of the country. Like they were in Darwin, and I was in, you know, country Tamworth. And so that was the beginning of our, but because I was so young in that experience and becoming a Christian, and it was very zealot-like and was very extreme. So, you know, there was a lot of evangelism and sharing our faith with other people. And the goal was to get others on board. And so it was extreme purity. It was extreme, Christianity, and so neither of us had had sex. And when we met each other, I was 28, they were 27, neither of us had had sex.
Quite late, 26 and 27.
Yeah, but I also was very protective. I was also very self-protective of my body. So the connection was really important. And to be honest, I just don't feel like I met anyone that I actually wanted to touch me in that way. And I'd never kissed anyone either. My partner was the first person I'd ever kissed as well. So it was my first everything and I knew I'd be good.
Yeah.
And when we kissed, they were like, are you sure you've never kissed anyone? I went, nah, but I knew I'd be good. I practiced on my hand for ages.
Did you meet through the church in the end? No. So
we met on a Christian website.
Oh, okay. Cute.
Yeah. And the thing that drew me to them is both of us, like, were chucked out of organization, not chucked out, but moved on from organizations because of our, because we both are very curious people. So we got to a position where we did start questioning leadership. I'd already left because I was going down the track of, okay, same-sex marriage, I'm actually on, or same-sex relationships. Like, you know, I was coming from a space where we had to repent for those things. But it never sat well with me. And then it got to a point where I started questioning, you know, the vulnerability of young people in the church and questioning sexuality and gender, and it just didn't make sense to me. And then I ended up finding Jacob, who has got a very complex gender and sexuality. They're intersexed and they have an extra Y chromosome. Mm. And so being married to someone with a complex gender assignment it was perfect, actually, because I was already in that space to sort of go, I'm interested in the diversity of gender and sexuality. Not because I identified as genderqueer or interested in the same sex. It turns out later that I was, but I wasn't allowed to be attracted to women, so I never let myself be attracted to women because it wasn't normal, you know, what you grew up with being with normal, because as, you know, with a lot of extreme Christianity, it's a non-negotiable. Anyway, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have been quite hurt by that perception. So I'm aware of that, and I apologise in advance if this is triggering for anyone. So we both were on a journey where we were questioning things, and we ended up, when we came together, that was the big attraction thing for both of us, is the fact that we were both very still Christian. We still believed in God and we had a spiritual interest, but we were also both questioning, and we were like questioning the status quo. And I think that drew us together because we're both in, for lack of a better word, ascension process around our faith and moving forward and going and asking those difficult questions in a space where we'd grown up with, where we found identity, where we found safety and acceptance, and then no longer being able, not finding those things because they didn't like that we were questioning those things in the church. Like it wasn't allowed, or it didn't sit well, didn't land well.
So then it really sounds like, as you say, you'd been preparing, or you'd been leading up to that moment of that dramatic moment of, you know, because you both had challenged norms separately and together in different ways to that point. And so it makes sense that you would challenge the norms about what a married couple is supposed to do and what that looks like to that point. Another, you know, portal has opened up in my mind, and what do I do with this information? What happened?
Well, interestingly, I went away because within a year of our marriage, my partner's like, I like men. And I went, okay, so are you on the way to Gayville or what? Because we hadn't had a child yet. And again, obviously, my brain was still developing around the queer space. I mean, sometimes now I cringe at where my brain went to, you know, years ago. And I think a lot of people do. I think we look back and go, oh, my God, I can't believe we used to think like that. Yeah. And they're like, I don't know, it goes away sometimes. You know, I don't always like men, but sometimes I do and I don't understand it. And I was like, okay. And so we kind of shelved it incidentally. They took on the garment of I'm bi and I'm interested in men sometimes. And they processed that in their own way.
Yeah.
And over years, they, even though we were totally married and very monogamous at that stage, they went through their own acceptance of their bisexuality and able to name it and declare it. So I remember thinking when they said that, I went away and was kind of like, well, I want them to experience some same-sex dating. And I'm like, I'm sure people do that. And I had some friends who used to have gay friends who had threesomes with men. And I'm like, look, they obviously know, they're the beacon. I mean, because we didn't know anyone in the non-monogamy space at all that we were aware of. It turns out we did, but everyone's so hush-hush. And no one wants to talk about it. No one wants to expose themselves. And I totally get that. But I'm like, no, I can't live like that. And my partner definitely cannot live like that. Neither of us can live in a secret life sort of persona. We have to be as transparent as possible. Yes, there's times to protect things and keep things private to be safe, or, you know, or to protect our child to a degree as well. They know that we're non-monogamous, but, you know, we have to be mindful of school and stuff like that. Anyway, in society, we have to be mindful of what we share, wise with what we share, with whom. But generally, we're pretty transparent. And so anyway, I went back to them and I said, look, I don't want to go through our entire marriage without you having that experience. What do you think about exploring same-sex connections? We didn't know about the umbrella of non-monogamy and what that looked like. I didn't even see it as non-monogamy. Like, it's hard to explain. It was more about them having an experience. I wasn't thinking about it as being like having relationships or connections outside of our marriage. Like, it wasn't at the forefront of my mind what that actually meant in terms of our relationship. I was more like, have this experience. And then I was like, oh, I was so virginal when I met my partner, maybe I should learn how to flirt because I'm terrible. People think I'm flirting with them when I'm just being nice. It's very interesting, the whole flirtation thing. But I and they were the only person I'd kissed, and I'm like, I wonder what it's like to kiss other people. And then I got excited and I was like, oh, this could be fun. And so in my mind, I was exploring seeing people, and we were just going to kiss and maybe go on some dates. That was my perception of non-monogamy. That was what I was thinking.
Yeah. And then did you, what did you Google? Like, how did you get information on
the community? So I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. But I was thinking, so I'm undiagnosed neurospicy, but I think, yeah, it's pretty evident that I'm ADHD and autistic. But so what I did was I rang my friend who I knew was in a gay serious relationship but knew that they sometimes had sex with men. And I remember thinking, that's hot, but like, what I couldn't compute. But I was like, they all know. if anyone's going to know how to enter into this world, they will. Because we just didn't know anyone. We grew up in the church, for crying out loud. So it's just like, yeah. Anyway, so rang them and I said, look, just want to let you know that we're going to open our marriage and we're going to go, they're going to do this and I'm thinking about doing this. And they're like, wow, congratulations. And I was like, oh, thank you. It was kind of exciting to have someone celebrate what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then, so they're like, Field, go on Field. Field is a good app for a starting point. So went on Field. It's very broad and it's not, there's not a lot of, vetting or anything like that. So anyone can be on there. So, you know, the one thing I'll say about anything sexually related or non-monogamous related, you have to have a very good sense of self and what you're happy to engage in. And people will project quite heavily in this space. So this was something I had to learn. But for me at that time, it was online. It was all online. Mm-hmm. So I was exposed to some very strong sexual projection. But then I was also flirting with people who was not my partner, who was not my, you know, marriage partner. And it was the weirdest, most hottest, exciting thing. And we were just chatting. You know, there was no meeting up at this stage. I was just talking to people and they're like, hey, cutie. I'm like, ooh, he thinks I'm hot. Oh, my God, I'm a mother. I'm being married. I'm like, I'm not sexy. I can't be sexy. How can I be sexy? Oh, my God. Extremely pubescent talking here. I was like a teenage kid in a candy store.
And then as you went through, and I think a lot of people think, oh, ethical non-monogamy, it's just about having sex and it's just about orgies and threesomes and foursomes, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a pretty big umbrella, isn't it? Ranging from, you know, couples who swing or, you know, bring others into their relationship temporarily, right through to people who are polyamorous and have many loves and deep relationships and everything in between. And so for you, while it started out as, you know, as you've said, a bit of sexual exploration for both of you connecting, where did you land in terms of understanding what you wanted out of ethical non-monogamy?
It's a bit of a process, and you have to allow yourself to fail and make mistakes. Is, you know, I get, when we went into it, I recognized this is risky business. You know, you have a very good connection with a person that I feel like is my soul person, my forever person. Again, we've always had the outlook since we were married, we do not own each other. Yes, we're married and we, you know, signed the piece of paper, et cetera, and we wear the rings. But at the end of the day, I don't own you, you don't own me. We're independent of each other to a degree. And at any point you didn't want to be with me, I would be hurt. But at the end of the, like, don't you want people to want you? Like, you don't want to feel, if you love it, set it free sort of thing. So we've always had that attitude. So it was another element of, okay, they're going to potentially meet, because we didn't know how this worked. And we're like, and you know, you always, I think a lot of people fear the whole, oh, you're going to meet other people, or maybe you will like them more. And I'm like, it's a very real fear that someone is better out there. You know what I mean? I think everyone thinks that. But in being non-monogamous for 2.5 years, we realized that what my partner I have is actually really rare. And it's not a ego thing. It's just about that the reason why you choose a person to be married to is because of that special connection that you have, you hope. And it's very rare. I think it's very hard to find that sort of connection at that depth and that level.
And one thing for me about this space is, even with that connection that you have a realization that it's actually impossible to get everything from one person.
Yes.
Like, you have a soulmate who you've gone into this journey with together, that you have this very rare, special, deep connection. But my personal belief is, as humans, it's still, even with that, you still can't get all your needs met through that one person. And so
100%. And why, and I, and it makes sense to me, like, you know, fast forward the 2.5 years, it now makes sense to me that we experience people in what I call like the 360. It sounds like a sex move, but but what I mean by that is that imagine if, you know, some connections are platonic, like, you know, there's people I've met on field or people in the sex space where it's just, it's never developed into anything sensual. And I think we think that, you know, that people are talking to us or only want sex, and that's not necessarily true. I've made lots of beautiful platonic connections through what is seen as a sex exploration space. And it hasn't been like that at all. And I would say I'm more social than I ever have been and have built a community for myself and not had sex with, I would say, 99% of the people that I've come in contact in this space. In terms of the community, in terms of field, well, yeah, I went through a hoe phase for sure. Happy to expand on that.
It's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. But yeah, when I first started on field, and then, you know, within 3 weeks of opening up, I popped my A&M cherry and had sex with someone else, and that was wild. Absolutely wild. It felt so weird but beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I went down my hoe phase and I started writing a list of how many people I'd slept with and
ran out of notepaper.
Basically. But it taught me that what I like and what I don't like. And sometimes because I've only had one sexual partner, I didn't know I squirted. I didn't know that I liked giving head. I didn't know that I liked my breasts being played with. Like there's all these different things because both your partner has preferences and you have preferences. And then there's preferences you didn't even know you had because and I mean, that's obviously not the only reason to explore non-monogamy, but it is about connection and it is about having an experience with all the senses. And I can see why it's really scary for some people because it feels like you're launching without any sort of protective gear. It feels really vulnerable and it's like, I think a lot of people are scared of themselves more than anything else. Like, what does this mean for me? Does this mean I'm, you know, a nymphoid mate? And I'm not a nymph. I'm not a sex fiend.
Yeah.
But I definitely enjoy the tactile experience of sensuality.
But then where you've landed, I think, just from our discussions, is moving away from the, I guess, sexual part of it and wanting to really bed down and increase your connections with community. As in connecting with people who think differently about relationships, platonic, not platonic, but, you know, just being in each other's lives, friendships, et cetera. So what does your E&M life look like nowadays?
Yeah, so towards the end of my hoe phase, I realised that I think not that my sexual exploration came to a close, but having one night stands effectively or just having hookups with people was not, it was not fulfilling anymore. Like at the moment, you know, it was mutually, we were being mutually opportunistic with the partners that I was connecting with, but then it got to a point where actually I'm like, no, I need to be a bit more holistic with my sexual connections now. I need friendship. I need to feel welcome. I need to feel like I didn't need a boyfriend or boyfriends. We can talk about polyamory, but I wouldn't, although I, in a nutshell, it's kind of like polyamory what I practice, but I'm not asking for people to move in with my family or me to move in with them or to be part of any sort of movement. But I do like the idea of friends being able to be vulnerable with each other and being emotionally available without having to have labels. So, you know, like you would a friend, but you also have sex. Like what I would imagine friends with benefits actually is.
Yeah.
Opposed to a fuck buddy.
Yeah.
So I didn't like the feeling of just being used for, not used, I don't think anyone's using people, but there is a degree of like, I mean, there are some people using it, but in terms of, it was mutually opportunistic, but then now I've gone, no, that makes me feel a bit empty inside now.
Yeah.
Initially it was fun. It was fine because I didn't have the spoons to be able to have meaningful relationships with any of the people I was having sex with. But now I'm making space for that.
Yeah.
Because I realize I don't value that type of sexual activity
connection
anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. What do the different generations bring to the ethically non-monogamous kind of world? So you're a Xennial. How does it look? So, you know, the Gen Zs, how do they behave? What are their features in this world compared to, say, the Gen Xs?
So, as I mentioned, I'm 43.
Yeah.
And I generally will connect with people who are a lot younger than me in their early 30s. And honestly, I identify sometimes with the younger 20s, but I don't tend to want to do anything sexual with them. I'm happy to have platonic relationships with them because I feel like as a 43-year-old and I also a social work background, there's a power imbalance there. And it doesn't sit well with me. But I don't have a problem with other people sort of exploring that because, you know, apparently adults are over 18. But for me, I struggle with it personally. Mm. And I just feel like, no, I can't do that. Mm. But what I admire about the 20-year-olds plus is their progressiveness around their sexuality.
Mm.
If you go on to their accounts, they're open, they're showing photos. It's very much like a dating website in terms of, it is a dating website, but it's about being open about who they are as their gender, as their orientation, and being expressive about that. 30s, they tend to be more open as well. But when you start hitting 40 and 50-year-olds, they're a lot more private. I think there's still the social awkwardness of, oh my gosh, I have a sexually diverse lifestyle, or I'm kinky and ooh, cringe, I don't want anyone I know to see me.
Mm.
I'm worried about, and we're not talking about work. So we're not talking about people who work, you know, with children or in a situation where they're in front of, like, I understand in certain people's jobs, they need to be wise about how they expose themselves. But I'm kind of thinking, but if there are people on, you know, field, then they're not going to care. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But if you're in a position where it gets out and you have a responsibility and it's putting, you know, then I can understand that. So I don't have expectations on that. But there are people who are private just for privacy's sake.
Mm.
And that's okay too. You don't have to expose yourself. But I just notice it more
in the older generation.
In the older generation, they're a lot more reserved about exposing the fact that they have they see it as an alternative lifestyle. I see it as not alternative. This is my lifestyle.
Yeah.
This is who I am.
And that would be similar to like the Gen Zers would think that.
Yes.
And one thing we've talked about in the past as well is just understanding of and relationship with consent.
Mm.
In say a Gen X, you know, boomer versus a Gen Z, there's just a lot more literacy around consent.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully no one will string me up, but I honestly think it's about I know this word has been thrown around a lot, the patriarchy, but I do think it is male privilege. What I notice is men will assume. And because I spent a lot of my sexual exploration feeling like I was straight, even though that's not the case anymore because I've allowed my brain to open up and accept that I do like women and are interested in women. But initially I didn't know, and I was trying, it was almost like I was trying to push out. I'm sure there's a bisexual in there somewhere, and I identify as Pam because I think everyone's awesome. So coming back to the generation, so with older people, they project their sexual fantasies quite heavily.
Mm.
And they'll tell me what they're going to do. They won't actually have a conversation about what I'd like.
Mm.
And they will project their sexual fantasies on me. They don't know how to translate someone being sexually confident and being able to communicate their needs and their boundaries and what they like. So I can talk about what I'm into sexually, and automatically they'll start talking dirty to me. Mm. And I'm like, I'm not actually talking dirty. I'm just expressing. I'm communicating facts to you.
Yeah.
But you've taken that as a license to then project your horn fantasies. Oh, yeah, I'm going to tie you up and I'm going to do all this stuff to you. And I'm like, oh, no. You misunderstood.
Mm.
You haven't actually asked my permission.
Mm.
And so this is when consent comes in. And then I was with someone recently and they're like, yeah, I don't understand why everyone has consent is sexy. Of course consent is sexy. Why would you need to put that in your profile? And then I had to explain to them that women especially experience times when men do not take no.
Mm.
And they project heavily onto you. And I've been put into situations where I asked someone to put a condom on and they didn't. And I remember going, oh, yeah, no, this is okay. Because women don't know how to, some women, obviously I'm generalizing, but in this space it's very easy for women to just accept it because we're more concerned about what's going to happen if I say no.
Mm-hmm.
If I put a boundary in place, am I in danger in this moment?
Yeah, yeah.
So my brain went into autopilot and disassociated from that scenario. It didn't obviously stop me. I'm still here. I'm still having exploration. But gee whiz, that was a learning curve. And that was an older gentleman.
Mm.
But I just feel like I've had a lot of experiences that are lovely with older gentlemen, but I just generally find they don't actually know how to have the conversations and they don't know how to consider what people want. They think they know what we want. They don't actually ask what we want. But I'm generalizing, so I just want to articulate that not obviously, you know, we don't want to do the hashtag not all men. I get that too. But it's something that I've experienced a lot.
If you reflect back on this absolutely wild ride, have there been any other kind of challenging moments that you want to talk about? Really moments where you're like, this is really hard.
Yeah, I mean, there's situations like the one I just talked about where the person didn't want to wear a condom and forced themselves on me. That's a pretty confronting and triggering thing that happened. But the thing that I don't think I was prepared for was the amount of self-development that is actually required for non-monogamy. If you're someone who doesn't want to focus on yourself and to uncover your demons and to go deep within your soul and start really processing things, it will come out like a bullet a gate during non-monogamy, because non-monogamy exposes even more. So if we're not able to, what I found is if we haven't been processing those things while we're monogamous or isolated and in our own worlds, it sort of puts the fire under the crucible, so to speak.
Mm.
And it's very hard to force that down when you've put a fire under the crucible. It's going to come to the surface. There's not a lot that can stop it. And it's going to present in multiple ways.
Mm.
And if you don't process it well or deal with it, or feel it, it will just snowball. So something that something that I didn't realize is when I found my person and we got married, the things I think a lot of people who were single who do like to go up the relationship escalator or feel that they do need someone in their life.
And just a little segue into what we mean by relationship escalator is, you know, date and then get serious and what is it? Exclusive.
Yeah.
Date exclusively and then maybe move in. Next step up the escalator is... I don't know. House,
getting married, having a house, having children.
So
my partner and I definitely did that.
Yes.
It was very, each step was quite conscious. We weren't we wanted to want to have children. We weren't like, oh, we're going to have babies and it's going to be amazing. We're going to have the best life ever. It wasn't like that. But I'm very conscious of the fact that that's the mononormative narrative and the heteronormative narrative that people aspire to. And I'm definitely not saying, because I think that all choices and all lifestyles are valid and awesome. So, yeah. But anyway, going back to what I was, my journey is that before I met my partner, I hadn't been with anyone. So my sense of self-worth and my sense of, am I desirable? Am I enough? Am I worthy of a relationship? Does someone actually want to give to me as much as I want to give to them? And so those things, I don't know if I ever fully process those things. And so they go down into your body, into your bones, and they just sit there and hibernate like a virus, really.
And do you think a sort of heteronormative structure like marriage, where literally someone signed a contract to say that they won't leave you, almost sort of papers over?
Oh,
that, and you don't, it make it, it allows it to lie dormant because you don't have to come up against that because of, you know, this contract says I'm worthy.
Yeah.
And this person is.
Oh, my God.
And it's this is my protective blanket and I don't have to process that.
Yeah, I got shivers you saying that because that's absolutely what it was. And I know that I needed that contract initially when we got married. It was definitely a security blanket, which should have sent alarm bells off to me. And my partner would have been happy for us not to get married. Would have been happy to have a ceremony without all the signing of documents and stuff, but I felt like that's what I needed. This is what Disney told me I was entitled to.
Yes.
As a single woman who saved themselves.
Yes.
Who kept themselves for their potential person, their husband, and kept myself pure.
Yes.
And all the rest of it. Like I was the pinup child for, you know, Puritan or whatever. Anyway, I'm not going to delve into that too much. But essentially, all of those things that I struggled with just go down into your bones. And then when we opened up our marriage, even though our marriage felt secure and our relationship felt secure, it all of a sudden, it brought up all these feelings of, am I worthy? Am I desirable? And not from my partner. The weirdest thing is in our opening up our marriage, so our marriage it was like a parallel thing. So we've got our marriage and we're moving forward and we were like little kids, like after a date or after a session, we'd be like, oh, so how'd you go? What was it like? Like we have this weird, annoying, like we actually think it's really fun and cute. And a lot of couples struggle around jealousy and stuff. Unfortunately, we don't.
Or so fortunately.
Fortunately, we don't. We actually feel a lot of compersion, which is basically love and adoration and wonder for another person and wanting them to do really well. So, you know, it's like when someone, you might have a friend that has achieved some wonderful things and you feel happy for them. That's what compersion is. So we felt a lot of compersion for each other in our experiences because we wanted each other to thrive. That's our goal for our relationship, is that each other is in a situation where we can both thrive. But meanwhile, I'm having connections with people and a lot of them are quite shallow, or they were hookups, or you know, superficially sort of thing. But I was feeling more insecure and having odd attachment connections with these people than I was with my own forever person. And that was actually the catalyst for me to go, am I worthy? Am I desirable? It actually never went away. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. That's when I realized that marriage with my partner papered over those very deep wounds of self-worth. And so a lot of people go into non-monogamy think that people are in non-monogamy for the sex. And I'm like, yes, there can be a lot of sex if you want it to be. But what I found is the personal growth and development was the biggest shock of all. I had no idea how much time I had to sit and reflect. What is this feeling? Why am I feeling this? Sitting in grief. Sitting in pain, sitting in those uncomfortable feelings about who you are as an individual. Am I lovable? Am I worthy and am I desirable? Well, the big questions. And I'm like, oh my God, I actually have to do the work. I have more work to do. And it's an ongoing, you realize that you're having all these different kinds of connections, all these different people, but you'll never let off the hook with the relationship you have with yourself. And I think non-monogamy puts it in the spotlight more than I was ever anticipating, that the relationship that you have with yourself and how you see yourself is actually so incredibly important, and we're all responsible for developing that. And it has been life-changing. I think that has been the biggest life change. Non-monogamy wasn't the thing. It was the catalyst to coming back to myself.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. And, you know, that you can't outsource that.
No.
You can be in a relationship with 10 people, 20 people, one person. You can never outsource your first relationship and your first partnership, which is that with yourself.
Yeah, I got shivers when you said that.
And it's the other thing I think about with doing something like this is the communication it would take. So you talk about self-growth. I would imagine that you can't go into something like this without being able to communicate to an advanced degree with your partner. And you mentioned you guys have always had really great communication, but even having great communication would have needed to step up to another level.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there were definitely teething problems in the beginning, but now we're sort of settled into our own groove about who we are and what we're about. It doesn't mean that we don't have our challenges. It doesn't mean I'm not going for long walks and meditating and going, what was that? And I'm not saying that everything's peachy either. I don't want to give off this vibe that, oh, my God, we're having so much fun and everything's really easy and we just have this flow and it's just beautiful. Like, I would hate for people to think that it's easy. This is hard.
Yeah.
Non-monogamy is challenging and it challenges a lot of our self-worth and development. But I'm married to someone who is autistic and ADHD. We had to learn how to communicate and talk about the hardship.
Yeah.
And go there. And now I'm realizing that actually is what set us up for non-monogamy, because if you are in a monogamous relationship or you're heteronormative and you're thinking about exploring non-monogamy and you don't know how to communicate, it's going to get 10 times worse because that is the absolute premise of having multiple relationships. If you don't know how to assert yourself and you don't know how to put boundaries in now with your ongoing partner, because a lot of what people don't tell you about in monogamy is the obligatory nature of, you know, we talk about one person fulfilling all our needs. And I used to think that was, they're not going to fulfill our needs, but that's your person, like whatever.
Yeah.
But so I hated that whole phrase, not one person fulfill your needs, but now I have a new perspective. And even now I don't know if we can articulate what that means. You have to feel it yourself to really, to take out the cringe aspect of that phrase.
Yeah.
Or the triteness of that phrase and to embrace what that actually means.
Mm.
I mean, and most of us are doing that already in a platonic way.
But I guess with monogamy and with there'd be so many assumptions made about the other person, or just the kind of Disney thing of they should just know they're my person or they're my soulmate, they just know. Whereas entering into something like ethical non-monogamy, you would have to get really good at articulating and understanding what you need. So yes, communication is one thing, but I just wonder whether prior to this you even had to articulate what you want, need, sexually, emotionally, all of that. Sounds like you and your partner have been good at that. But, yeah, I think so many conversations, I would imagine that for couples going into this, they're having conversations about what their partner needs, likes, wants that they probably never even had before, never even talked about.
Even my partner and I have always been really good at communicating. We realised there was something wrong with our sex, not wrong with our sex life, but it wasn't feeling like we've ever really gelled that well sexually. And we always sort of, it was the elephant in the room. We never really talked about it. And we tried, but because we'd only been with each other, and I'm not saying that you have to go out and sow your old oats to rolled oats. It definitely helped us put words to things in our own sexual relationship. Oh, yeah, you know what, this, that's why. And this, you know, it's interesting, you know, talking about what our sex life used to be like, and we put so much pressure on ourselves. And now we're finding there's less pressure. Not because we're sexually satisfied with other people, but I think we're realizing how normal sex actually is and expects, you know, we have these very high expectations even in the non-monogamy world. It's going to be hot.
Yeah.
It's going to be friction. It's going to be sexy and it's going to be, you know, juicy. And it's like, yeah, sometimes, but not really.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's not the grass isn't greener on the other side. You have to actually, I think if you start watering the garden,
yeah,
you realize that you actually have really good green grass. And to work with that, to work with the garden that you're in and not looking at the greener on the other side, but actually going, okay, looking down at your grass going, okay, let's see what the problem is. Let's sort it out. Because all you're going to do is go over to the other grass and bloody strip it. And then you'll find it's brown as well. So
since we came up with this idea, I don't know if you've seen E&M is having its moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just want the listeners of the XYZ Experiment podcast to know that, you know, we were ahead of the curve. We haven't jumped on the bandwagon. We led the bandwagon out of the, you know, stables here. Leonie, you're amazing.
Aww.
And just thank you so much for being so open and just sharing your experience with us. I've loved it. Love chatting to you today.
Well, thank you for having me. I always enjoy sharing. I'm always happy to share. And I think it's important that we share the authentic aspect of non-monogamy. It isn't all Mills and Boone.
Yeah.
We're people, we're human, and we've got to remember that we're dealing with real emotions, real truth, real bodies, yeah, real experiences.
Hi, it's Sarah. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us here at the XYZ Experiment podcast. Don't forget to leave a rating and review. And if you enjoyed our show, make sure you tell all your friends and family and, of course, subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at the XYZ Experiment. You'll get all our latest updates and news. And a big shout out to Luke Champion, who composed our original music.